In his 1952 address to the International Congress on Neurohistopathology, Pope Pius XII provided a moral and philosophical basis for many of the principles that have been articulated at Nuremberg. So the Church effectively not only agrees with, but extends its capacity in the area of moral theology and spirituality to provide underpinnings for and agreement with the notion that there is, in fact, this generalizable sense of morality that applies across the board to all cultures, irregardless of what laws they may pass or what significant principles they may hold as being of most significance, that there is a foundational and fundamental basis that must be accepted, which is particularly seen in, which in a sense crystallizes out in the area of the development of medical science. If we drop down, and we've already looked at this document, but we're going to look at it in a little more detail because you have the entire text of this document before you and not merely the selections that we looked at in our review of the history and development of Catholic bioethics. If we drop down to number 5, the three general areas which provide the three basic divisions of this document, and I might mention that in the original it did not include the paragraph numbers. Those have been added subsequently, especially in the English version. The Pope here in number 5 highlights that the three categories he's going to particularly address concern the interests of medical science, the interests of the individual patient, and the interests of the community, the bonum commune, the common good. So he begins with the interests of science as justification for research and the use of new methods, and this begins with number 7. And he acknowledges here that research and the acquisition of truth for arriving at new, wider, and deeper knowledge and understanding of the truth are in themselves in accordance with the moral order. The search for truth is a good thing. However, in number 8 he says, this does not mean that every method becomes licit because it increases and deepens our knowledge. Knowledge and the pursuit of knowledge is not in itself such a good that it can justify any means for its acquisition. And he goes on to say, in the section that I've highlighted in white, science is not the highest value to which all other orders of value should be subordinated. This is something that is important for us as a culture to remember because of the strong emphasis we place on science. And one must add that there is within science itself no obvious curb to methods that would render more and more information. That is, science does not carry with it a system of ethics that would prevent the exploitation of individuals for the acquisition of knowledge. This has to be interpreted from outside, not from the methodology of science, but from a conviction of there being a moral order within a humanity itself, within the created order. And the Pope asserts here that among the things that are more important than the acquisition of knowledge include the confidential relations between doctor and patient. This is central. It will come up again in this document, and it will be an issue again and again in our consideration of informed consent. The physician-patient relationship is everything. The amount of trust that the patient has in their physician means that even if they're given all the information in the world, even if they're told everything that can go wrong, they will often find it impossible to believe that this person who is caring for them does not have their best interests at heart, and that if they are recommending it, it must be a good thing. So this confidential relation between doctor and patient is central, must always be borne in mind, and the right of the patient to the life of their body and soul in its psychic and moral integrity, he says, are some of the many values that are superior to the scientific interest, that is, the good of acquiring more knowledge. If one then drops down, he goes on to, in section number 2, the interest of the patients. This begins with number 10, but if we could now drop down to number 12, where there is some highlighted text. In the first place, he says, it is assumed that as a private person, the doctor can take no measure or try no course of action without the consent of the patient. Now here, he's not speaking just of the question of experimentation. So he is representing this diffusion out, this application of the principles articulated at Nuremberg to broader questions than just experimental procedures, but really anything that has to do with medicine itself. Now, the background here, of course, is the acquisition of scientific knowledge, the use of experimental procedures, but the Pope's statement is much more general than that. The doctor can take no measure or try no course of action without the consent of the patient, and the doctor has no other rights or power over the patient than those which the latter gives him explicitly or implicitly and tacitly, meaning that the patient gives clear, formal consent, or in virtue of the fact that the patient comes back and seeks help, that implies that the patient is presuming that the physician can do things for them. And this is the kind of presumption that is made of people who dial 911 and ask that emergency services show up. The paramedics do what they can because the person presumably wants to have their services used. However, the Pope goes on to say the patient cannot confer rights that the patient does not possess. The patient cannot give the physician permission to do something which is immoral, that is wrong from the perspective of the patient. And he goes on to explain this in number 13, that because everyone is a user of their own body and not a proprietor, that is, you do not own your own body, we do not have unlimited power to destroy or mutilate our bodies and its functions. We are ultimately God's servants. We are God's stewards. We are those who maintain the garden of creation, including our own bodies. We do not possess or own them. So the patient, the Pope goes on to say, can allow individual parts to be destroyed or mutilated when and to the extent necessary for the good of his being as a whole. The principle of totality, that you can sacrifice a part for the sake of a whole. The patient, he concludes in number 14, has no right to involve his physical or psychic integrity in experiments or research when they entail serious destruction, mutilation, wounds, or perils. And so, if we then go on to down to number 18, the physician is bound by the same limits. The doctor, as a private individual, disposes only of the rights given him by the patient, and because the patient can give him only what he himself possesses, and that's limited. The patient is not the complete owner of his own body. And we need to highlight here what is said in number 19, that the presumption of the patient having the right to choose therefore extends also to those who represent the patient. And that's particularly true, as the Pope notes, in the case of people who are incapable of caring for themselves, children below the age of reason, those who are not capable of making decisions, and those who are judged to be incompetent or insane. These legal representatives have no rights other than the person, the rights the person would have if they were capable. They have those rights to the same extent. They cannot give the doctor permission to dispose of things outside those limits. This is a very central concept that will emerge again in the area of advanced directives. That is, a person deciding ahead of time to determine what they want to have done if they can no longer speak for themselves, if they become unconscious or incompetent, and entrusting that power to someone else. That individual is empowered to act in the way that the person themselves would act if they could speak for themselves. So the Pope is presuming here that those who act for an individual have no more rights, have the same responsibilities as the individual themselves, and it is that person's well-being and indeed that person's desires that are going to be paramount. Now in number 20, we move on to the notion of the interest of the community, the common good, the bonum commune. And the Pope speaks of this as something important, but he highlights in number 25 that what we saw in the great post-war trials, so he is reacting to and specifically articulating principles that come from these Nuremberg trials, they brought to light a terrifying number of documents testifying to the sacrifice of the individual in what were described as the medical interests of the community. And this he describes as a terrible evil. He asks in number 27, what could ever authorize any doctor attempting these dreadful experiments? And then finally, number 28, it must be noted that in his personal being, man is not finally ordered to usefulness to society. On the contrary, the community exists for man. So it is not that individuals can be sacrificed for the good of the community in a misuse of the, quote, principle of totality, unquote, but rather that society itself should be ordered so as to protect and to defend the individual. If we go down to number 32, it is the state that must authorize the physician to act on the interests of the communities. This is not something that a small group of people or an individual can do based on their own idea of what is the good of the common whole. That does need to be articulated by those who represent the whole, that is to say, the state itself, but there are limits to what the state has the right to do. Just because the state passes a law doesn't necessarily make it just or right. The latter, that is to say, the state cannot pass on a right that it does not possess. The state cannot pass and have legitimate laws which are themselves destructive of the goods of the individual. And then the Pope clarifies in number 35 that the principle of totality cannot be used to sacrifice the individual on behalf of the whole. Then finally, in number 38, he says that in regard to new procedures and techniques, it is not the case that all medical experimentation must entail no risk whatever. That would be impossible, the Pope notes in 38. There will be a certain degree of risk and danger, but he says, and this text is highlighted, there is a degree of danger that morality cannot allow. In doubtful cases where means already known have failed, it may happen that a new method, still insufficiently tried, offers, together with dangerous elements, appreciable chances of success. If the patient gives their consent, the use of the procedure is licit, but this way of acting cannot be unheld as a line of conduct in normal cases. So sometimes the only thing that's available is something that carries a proportionately greater risk, and that may be acceptable, but it is not ordinarily the case that one can submit or require submission to extremely risky procedures. So what we see in this very interesting document is an example of Pius XII's desire to comment on many moral issues of his day, on many issues pertaining to medicine and the practice of medicine, but in particular here, an articulation of the rights of patients, the significance of the physician-patient relationship, the limits of medical science, and the subordination of science to the good of the individual.